No, I've never. I've seen a shoe blown out here and there over the course of my years, but I've never seen anything quite like this. When Zion Williamson went down, at first you thought he slipped, and then you looked a little bit closer and said, "Wait a minute, he blew his shoe out," and he was holding that right knee, and it was just a bizarre happening.
The injury with Zion, obviously, you know, whatever. You know, the very first thing is just to address that. It's a mild knee sprain. The knee is stable. We don't know how long he'll be out. I think we'll find out more about that. So that's that.
Jay Billis of ESPN talking about the weirdness of the Zion Williamson injury last night, in which he blew through a shoe in a loss to North Carolina. Mike Krzyzewski, head coach of Duke, after the game, updating the situation the best way he could at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Mild knee sprain, the knee is stable. Everybody, and we're talking about it, we'll talk about it very prominently on today's show. Everybody's freaking out over what happened last night at Cameron Indoor Stadium because college basketball's biggest name, personality, and a future NBA star left the high-profile game with an injury. And now it has intensified the calls, which have already started, by the way. These have been in effect for a while. Zion Williamson shouldn't play. Man, that's at a fever pitch now. There was a parade of NBA stars reaching out to Zion Williamson on social media, urging him not to play ever again.
Is that right?
Did you see what Luka wrote?
No.
Somebody was saying about how like these players don't get paid and everybody else gets paid and not making money. And Luka just responded, quote tweeted and said, "Go play in Europe."
That's good.
It does shine a much brighter light, I will say this, on the NCAA and what a sham of an operation it really is.
Well,
has had free labor for a big business for how long now?
Yeah. Nike statement on Zion Williamson, quote, "We are obviously concerned and want to wish Zion a speedy recovery. The quality and performance of our products are of utmost importance. While this is an isolated occurrence, we are working to identify the issue," end quote.
When you referenced it, Puma last night, Puma Basketball and Puma Hoops on Twitter. Wouldn't have happened in the Pumas. It was deleted pretty quickly after that. But not before it was screen captured and liked by 2,700 people.
And I think this is why this story is just so profound on so many levels. When you look at who was at the game and the hype in the game and the ticket prices in the game to attend the game, Barack Obama at the game, Spike Lee, Todd Gurley, all these people, they were there to see the Zion Williamson show. It's Duke, North Carolina. It's the best rivalry in college basketball. But this year, what was different? It's different because it was Zion against North Carolina. And so for this to happen in a Nike shoe, it's opened up all these little tentacles. You mentioned the idea of the pay-for-play dynamic in college athletics that is gaining some momentum over recent years based on players who are making very hard business decisions now. As somebody pointed out, you look at all the money that shoe has made for Nike, for Duke basketball, for Mike Krzyzewski, for Phil Knight, and how little was paid to the worker constructing that shoe in China, and how nothing is received by the guy wearing that shoe who is now collapsed on the floor. In Zion Williamson. And there you go. There you've got the NCAA shamateurism model right there in front of you. Yeah. It's all right there. Excuse me, my throat is... I'm dying here today. I'm like you, man. Struggling. Okay, that's one. Number two, you've got the player. Is he injured? And if he is injured, what is that going to mean to the upcoming NBA draft? If he is moderately injured or only concerned about future injury, will he shut down? Will he tap out and make a business decision from a basketball team that is favored to win an NCAA championship with him?
Well, let's apply an NBA example to that, okay? Because we do see strategic rest, tanking, sitting players, load management. All of these things are real in the NBA right now, and a lot of them apply.
Did you just say load management?
I didn't come up with the phrase. That's the phrase that somebody else came up with. But those things exist. And they apply to teams who are usually not competitive, out of the playoff race, and the thinking is, why am I going to risk my players when the carrot of the postseason or a championship is not there? Mm-hmm. Okay, you can you know, react to the merit of that on your own individual level. That's fine. But the fact of the matter is, they're still professionals and they're still getting paid, and it goes against really the basic tenet of competition, as mm-hmm. we know as human beings. So if you want to apply that to the Zion Williamson thing, okay, Zion Williamson's being urged now not to play. Yeah, the situation is messed up, but there could be a championship on the line for Duke, which is one of the reasons he went there.
To win a championship.
Yes. Yeah. It's one of the reasons why Mike Krzyzewski and his staff put in all the resources and recruited Zion Williamson, not only to get him to the NBA, but to win a championship.
Yeah.
You don't get a trophy for putting the most players in the NBA. And I get it. There's inherent problems with college basketball that really need to be addressed, and maybe this situation pushes the progress and changes the system so this doesn't have to happen anymore.
When Zion Williamson limped off the court last night, first he took a seat on the bench and he was being tended to, and I thought, oh, this is bad. We're 36 seconds into this game, and now it's been unplugged. All the excitement is gone. And then when he got up and he walked to the locker room, my first thought was, oh boy, he's not coming back. It's certainly not tonight, because people will be involved. And then cooler heads will prevail. And, okay, we've got to protect this. Does Zion Williamson get so mad at Nike that he refuses to play for a Nike-funded school in Duke? Does he use that as a reason to shut it down the rest of the way? If he does shut it down the rest of the way, will they just feign injury? Could you feign injury and shut it down without hurting your draft stock?
How could you get that mad at the shoe? I mean,
I don't know.
We don't know what the situation with the shoe was.
Of course, it might not even be the shoe's fault.
Will Nike throw so much money at him now?
Did Roy Williams employ somebody to crawl through the crawl space into the Duke locker room to tamper with the shoe? We don't know.
Wow, I can't believe you're going there. I covered that story. Boots on the ground, man. When the Cleveland Indians went through the air conditioning duct at Comiskey Park,
to get the
cork bat from Albert Bell.
Exactly.
I'm a hell of a lot smarter about basketball than you guys are.
Oh boy, oh boy. Yeah, but you're right. Does Nike can't afford to lose him now? So will they really outrageously pay him? It's the most valuable property to enter the NBA since LeBron.
It's too bad.
They're going to be fine again. Trust me.
It's too bad that real life isn't like the movies. Because in the movies, this is perfect. First play of the game, Zion Williamson gets hurt. Oh, no. We're down a player. Can anybody here play basketball and fill in? Barack Obama stands up from the crowd. I've been known to hoop a bit. And then all of a sudden, Obama's on Duke's team for the rest of the year.
Shooting left-handed skinny jumpers from the corner?
I fully admit that I am subscribing to the romance that exists in sports when you look through history. I mean, what would have happened if Willis Reed came through the tunnel at Madison Square Garden and said, you know what?
I'm good.
I can't go.
Can't
what
do
if Michael
it.
Jordan, instead of playing heroically through the flu in the finals, would have said, I'm not risking my future earnings. This team can win without me, and I'll play when I'm better. I mean, all of those stories are legendary. There's no legend in protecting your future assets. And somebody tweeted me and said, have you ever had a gold mine like Zion right in front of you? Jake, one of our good listeners, tweeted that to me. And no, I can't fathom that situation.
Uh-huh.
But every single person on planet Earth that draws a salary for anything is risking their future earnings every single day.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Seth Davis pointed out, that like, okay, let's say he doesn't play. What is he going to do for the rest of the year? He has to stay in shape, especially a guy that sort of body built. Seems like easily they could get overweight if they're not. And if he's working out, you're putting yourself at risk of getting hurt just as if you're playing basketball.
Zion Williamson said that he gained 100 pounds in 2 years. Did you see that?
Well, he was 6'3", 175 pounds as a freshman. And he put on 100 pounds after that, which is, that's a pretty good size for a freshman, but
yeah,
not exactly superstar NBA, future NBA player type dimensions. Maybe it's 285 pounds.
I know.
Maybe more.
I know. it's going to be interesting to see how this story plays out now, because there is so much on the line. Duke's season, hundreds of millions of dollars, Zion Williamson's future career, people in his ear.
Well, here's a sampling of some of the NBA players.
Good, I want to hear this.
Media. LeBron just tweeted, "Hope young fella's okay." Literally blew through his shoe emoji, praying hand emoji. LeBron's emoji game is strong.
Yeah, it is gifts.
Donovan Mitchell. Again, let's remember all the money that went into this game, and then these players get none of it, and now Zion gets hurt. Something has to change at NCAA. Retweeted by Trey Young. This, facts, 100. Isaiah Thomas. Yeah, he's keeping it 100. Isaiah Thomas, let these kids go straight out of high school. Too much on the line to be messing with college if you've got a legit chance to turn pro. One injury can change somebody's career. Zion, sit your ass down, and we'll all be ready for you in the big boy league. Hashtag looking out for the players.
That's what LeBron once told his mom, by the way. Sit your ass down. He did. She was courtside when he played in Cleveland. Don't you remember that? You don't remember that. It was a famous LeBron moment.
Yeah. Spencer Dinwiddie. Right. I do remember that.
Okay.
Spencer Dinwiddie said, instead of making a self-serving shoe joke, I hope Zion W32 is okay. Kind of a backhanded prop up of his own shoe brand, which he started.
Uh-huh.
Spencer Dinwiddie has his own shoe brand. Did you know this?
No, I did not know that.
He is a big baller.
So this is all happening in real time.
Yes.
I mean, and if you're Duke and you have a huge business relationship with Nike, which they do, you are going to be, he'll be fine. Everything will be fine. We'll find out. I agree with you. The hype and the hysteria around this injury was insane, but to experience it in real time, I'm borderline thinking of opening a clairvoyance business, by the way. I've had a couple of incidents with my kids recently where I've had moments where I've seen things that actually have happened.
You know, if you're only borderline thinking about it and you don't know if it's going to be a good idea or bad idea,
you probably should not go into the business.
Well, that's a good idea. It's a really good idea. It's kind of like that guy that sat down with a clairvoyant and said, so you can see the future. And the clairvoyant said, oh, yeah, I definitely can. The host slapped him across the face and said, oh, yeah? Then why didn't you see that coming?
What are these examples of clairvoyance that you've experienced?
I don't want to get into them, but there were two of them with my kids recently where I saw something.
Oh, so you're just going to tease us with that.
But as I sat down to watch last night's game, I said to myself, man, could you imagine if this kid got hurt in this game? I swear that
happened. I see a shoe, and I see a former president. And it's all come to fruition.
No, and again, I'm kind of being half facetious here, but when this went down, it was this perfect storm of everything, You talk, and we've seen this story begin to proliferate and it started with Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette and those guys who ejected themselves from bowl games, and everybody went nuts. Now, common occurrence, right?
Yeah.
N'Keal Harry, all the way across.
At the time, I told you about earlier this year when the Zion question first popped up. The comment my buddy Eric made to me is like, it won't ever get to that way in college basketball because there's still the NCAA tournament, and that means something.
And it does. You're right. But what if? What if he doesn't play another minute of college basketball?
Well, would you think less of him?
Well,
if you're the Suns and you say this guy cares more about making money than he does about winning a championship, did that have any way on you at all?
If you're the Suns, absolutely not. Because that guy is protecting his future to come and play for you.
To come and make money.
To come and make money.
Not necessarily.
To be a professional. But again, if you had that choice, if you're Zion Williamson and you've got hundreds of millions of dollars on the other side of that fence, are you going to keep fighting on that side of the fence? If it's just sitting there waiting for you? It's really easy to sit back and go, oh, I can't believe these kids. You don't want to play in the NCAA tournament? You got $100 million waiting on the other side, and you just went through that scare over a shoe that blew out on you? You're going to think about that. You're going to think about, look, at the end of the day, nobody wants to admit it. We all cheer for our own self-interests, every last one of us.
And I am, too. Acknowledging the issues that exist in this scenario, selfishly, I want to see Zion Williamson play in the NCAA tournament.
So do I.
I think everybody who has any kind of interest in college basketball thinks that way, but then they think more about the future of the player. Jay Billis himself just tweeted a minute ago, "The debate over whether Zion or any player should shut it down is solely about risk. Is there significant risk to the player's health or to the player's long-term financial future? If not, play. The rest is just a value judgment." It's so level-headed, and it makes sense coming from Jay Billis.
It is.
It's a minor injury. It could have been bad. It's a minor
injury.
Unless
there's a tear in that knee.
There's not. They've already checked it out. It's a minor knee sprain, and the knee is sound. It's already been announced that's the case.
Oh, they're going to announce he's got a tear in his knee?
Why wouldn't they?
Okay. We'll find out. We'll find out. Because if he's got a small tear, he could probably play through it.
Here's the question. Big picture, way down the road. Because, again, this could spur change in the NCAA. Why do people watch college athletics?
The unpredictability of it.
I think first and foremost is an emotional connection to an institution.
That's one.
Specifically in football, college basketball, you're watching to see future NBA talent at the ground floor, basically.
Great athletes who are still kids and do stupid things on occasion.
Sure.
Highly unpredictable.
Sure. Now, if you eliminate the NCAA as part of this time-honored path to get to the NBA, let's say the Luka Doncic thing happens and these young players are going to say, I'm not going to risk this for nothing. I'm going to get paid, whether it's in Europe, whether it's the creation of a new league here. Would it mean the death of college sports? You'll never take the emotional attachment.
Yeah.
When I see somebody, a perfect stranger, walking down the street wearing an ASU sweatshirt or something, I feel like, all right, there's a connection there. All right, Sun Devils, I get it. And then that will never exist. But would you still watch college basketball or college football if the players making up the teams had no chance of going pro? I think that prospect scares the heck out of the NCAA. Because
Transcendent talent out of the league. You're right. Because just like football will never die, there'll be plenty of very good, excellent basketball players filling up basketball teams in universities across America. But if it becomes acceptable common practice for all the elite talent to go play elsewhere, what does it do? I think you're right about that. Because we've already seen a little bit of that drain, and certainly we've seen the temporary nature of these college careers, one and done, that it has made an impact on the sport. It's a fascinating question.
Would you watch? I would still watch for the emotional connection and guys in the uniforms or athletes in the uniforms participating and trying to win a championship. There's something just inherently compelling about that to me.
Yeah, I would watch, but I think it gets down to the fact that look at the hype of last night's game. Look at the ticket prices. Look at what that game attracted. It happened because one of the players in the game sort of represented the way college basketball used to be. Attractions that you would go out of your way to see. Mm-hmm. Remember those old Georgetown teams? Patrick Ewing, Michael Graham, Horace Broadnax.
Horace Broadnax.
Reggie Williams.
That's a good pull.
Thank you. Phi Slamma Jamma, the Running Rebels. Larry Johnson, Stacey Augman.
What was the last team where you could name at least four of the starting five?
That's a great question. What was the last college
that wasn't your favorite team?
But I think the NCAA can still get back to that with the change in rules and how they work with the NBA. Like Zion Williamson, realistically speaking, has no business being in college basketball. He's sufficiently talented enough to make the leap, as others have, from the high school ranks right into the pros.
And this, physically mature enough.
This ridiculous system is creating this dilemma. Creating this proposition that should Zion Williamson even play anymore because it's done. He should be in the NBA right now. So if the rules on eligibility change and you can get something similar to football or you can get something similar to college baseball, now once you make that declaration, I'm here to play college athletics, college basketball, you're here for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, the other aspect of all this that I thought about is, consider the number of, you know, Zion Williamson, we knew, and most of these guys that would be drafted in June, we knew before this basketball season, they were good enough to play in the NBA, correct?
Yeah.
The number of athletes who enter college as not pro prospects and develop into pro prospects during their college days is becoming increasingly shorter. You would agree?
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I do.
So hopefully that's the result of all of this, is that the NBA says, yeah, we got to change this again. And it's coming, but maybe it needs to be more sweeping than just elimination of the one-and-done rule.
Yeah, I know. I know for a fact that what they were trying to do is they were trying to inch it towards the football model or towards the baseball model, where once you choose college, you're locked in for a few years. That way it kind of serves everybody. But that's not real American. That's not real. That doesn't reflect the real world workplace, where if you're really good at something, go to work. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's a crazy story that is hit on so many levels, but you can see the way it is speaking to current NBA players, the ones who've been through this system, the ones who have taken money under the table and don't feel one bit of remorse or ethical twinge about it because of the way the system robs them. Yeah, and here you got the NCAA. Well, people want their amateur sports. Really? No, you want your antitrust exemption. It's nothing to do with amateurism. Do you care? I do. There is something to watch young kids, like college basketball players, because you see them and you go, man, that dude looks like a man. He plays like an NBA player, but he's still a kid. He's doing stupid things. And there's something great about that. There's something where it's college sports and amateur sports, the reason why people like them is because they're not supposed to mean that much. It's supposed to be about good try. That's cool. Learn some life lessons. Compete. Learn how to be a good sport. Grace and dignity, and learn how, dignity and failure and success.
And
all
hey,
that
you get
stuff.
A free education.
Right.
Once upon a time, that was enough for the American public.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer is the case.
No.
Because I don't think anybody in the 40s and 50s looked at professional sports in this country and saw the gold mine that it was going to become. Even more recently than that. I mean, the exponential growth of money in professional sports over the last 10 years, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah.
It's clearly no longer enough to compensate, quote-unquote, athletes at the college ranks with a free education.
And that, to me, Vinny, is the iceberg that's moving, what you just said right there. And that's why that genie's never going back in the bottle.
Nope. Dave Matthews Band is coming to Auction Pavilion on September 13th. We're giving you the chance to win tickets before they go on sale tomorrow. Just head to the rewards page at arizonasports.com for your chance to win and complete details on the show. It's Bickley Murata. We're coming to you live from the Auction Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Welcome back, everybody. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jarrett Carlin, and Eric Cohen, who was just brutal to an intern this morning. Oops, did I say that? We've got an intern who, God bless him, he's very passionate about sports. He walked into our meeting and just wanted to be part of the meeting. And you shushed him out of there, Eric. Man, killing a young kid's passion. Don't let him beat you down, dog.
Strive to be in Eric's seat.
That's right.
No, don't do that.
I'm just kidding. I love Eric. I love all you guys.
No facial. The facial expression.
Even if I don't tell you it enough, I love all you
guys.
The
human emoji.
Yeah. All right. In football, I think I ticked them all off, Vinny. None of them are looking at me. In football.
I didn't know you were going
to
say that.
No, I didn't either, to be honest with you. In football, there's this growing story here. I don't know where it's coming from, but there are rumors now that Russell Wilson could end up in New York as quarterback of the New York Giants. Okay? And the thinking basically stems from, what's his fiance's name? Or are they married?
Ciara.
Ciara. Okay, yeah. That's how you pronounce it. So apparently she might be in his ear saying, hey, you know what? It might be real convenient if we're in New York City, all that kind of stuff, right? And it would be a big cultural upgrade in the minds of some to go from Seattle to Manhattan. But here's the thinking beyond that and how this might get out of control for Seattle. Say Russell Wilson, and this is perfect. It's a perfect topic for right here and now because we're talking about injuries and what they mean and risk tolerance and all that. If Russell Wilson wanted to continue to do the year-by-year contract thing with Seattle, okay, and not cash out going forward for a long-term deal, here is the way this thing breaks down, all right? And I think this is crazy way to look at it. If Russell Wilson is willing to bear the year-to-year injury risk and be able to say no to any and all long-term offers from Seattle, he's going to force the Seahawks into some very tough decisions. For instance, if they pay $30.34 million in 2020, will they pay $36.41 million in 2021 and then $52 million in 2022, which is the way this thing all graduates? But that's all incumbent on the player to go year by year and not say, okay, give me the $100 million guaranteed in the five-year contract. And if that happens, does Seattle eventually say, no, we're not paying that? And then does he go to New York?
Well,
that's where this whole thing is steeped in.
There's interesting aspects to all of this, but when you boil it back down to where it originated, Colin Cowherd on his radio show, and the exact quote was this: Wilson's wife is Ciara. She's a singer and entertainer. She would prefer to live in New York. The Giants need a quarterback, and there's nobody in the draft they love. So just remember this. A lot of things add up. Last year of Russell Wilson's contract, his wife would prefer New York. Seattle is not an entertainment mecca. The Giants need a star quarterback to replace Eli Manning. Man, you want to talk about dots that don't have a line in between them for using that as the origin of this story. Okay, Ciara is an entertainer and a singer. Why New York? Why not Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
The Rams might need a quarterback.
It's a good point.
Phillip Rivers is getting old. Vegas is going to have a team. They could be looking for a quarterback. That's an entertainment mecca. And if you're an entertainer and a singer, you're not really tied to one place geographically. You're traveling around the world.
I think the reason that has all happened is because, unlike Los Angeles, I guess Oakland needs a quarterback. New York is in the process of saying goodbye to Eli. They're going to need a franchise quarterback.
They're going to need a quarterback.
They're going to need a quarterback. And in a town like that culturally loves to ground and pound the football, a quarterback like Russell Wilson would be spectacular for them. You grew up a Giants fan, right?
Yes.
Okay. Do you believe that the New York Giants being good in football is similar to the Lakers being good in basketball?
No.
No. I agree with you.
I don't.
I agree with you.
And a lot of that is the experience I had growing up a Giants fan, because they were just dog crap terrible when I became a fan in the 70s. They didn't get good until the mid-80s. They were just awful and an afterthought.
Yeah. Didn't they have to do basically an intervention with the New York Giants? Didn't the league get involved?
That I'm not sure on.
I think that might have happened. It's something to bear watching, only because if you're a football player and a quarterback, if you're a quarterback and you have and you're that good and you stay healthy, that Kirk Cousins route can be very powerful, right? You sign a one-year deal, you're guaranteed X amount percentage raise based on your position, and you keep getting fatter and fatter and fatter until the team can no longer digest your salary. That's what happened to Kirk Cousins. That's why Kirk Cousins was dispatched out of Washington.
True, but his importance to Washington as a franchise, not nearly the same level as Russell Wilson's importance to the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks have been on this great run. They were expected to take a step back this year. The one constant through all of their success, outside of Pete Carroll, but from a player standpoint, the one constant they've had is Russell Wilson. And I don't think that organization will let him go. And when you are a professional athlete that is based in Seattle, Washington, and you do choose to marry an entertainer and a singer, don't think that those conversations just popped up now.
That's true.
Look, this is what I do. This is where I have to do it. You can be a singer and entertainer anywhere, touring the world, doing what you do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. I'd be shocked if they let him go.
It's an interesting thing to chew on.
But before they got married, remember, they were abstinent. After they're married, now he's more willing to agree to anything.
What does that have to do with anything?
I don't know.
I don't know. You could be abstinent anywhere.
Good point. And largely out of your own choice, out of your own volition.
Speaking of New York, this Landon Collins situation is pretty interesting. Josina Anderson of ESPN had reported that Landon Collins cleared out his locker and said goodbyes to people at the team's facility. According to Josh Alper on Pro Football Talk, that was countered by local reporters who put out that Collins' locker had not been cleared out. Landon Collins took matters into his own hands, went to Twitter to clear things up. Collins wrote, "The stuff in that locker that I have left, I do not need."
Wow.
It's a pretty good football player that's going to hit the market, apparently.
Wow.
I just thought that was interesting.
No, I think that's kind of funny.
Eliminate the middleman.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
We mentioned Le'Veon Bell's situation, too, in the splash. I don't know if you saw what he tweeted after Kevin Colbert, the GM of the Steelers, came out and said, Le'Veon is still a great player. We can't afford to use any other type of tags. Le'Veon will be an unrestricted free agent at the start of the new league year. Le'Veon Bell channeled his inner Martin Luther King Jr. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, I am free at last.
Oh, boy. Oh, the struggle is real, isn't it, Antonio?
Or Le'Veon.
Or Le'Veon. Yeah, that too. Sorry. They're one and the same.
But the other wrinkle in all of this is the Ben Roethlisberger stuff. Colbert also said that Roethlisberger is the unquestioned leader of the locker room, suggested that if players were smart, they would listen to him. Here's the exact quote. "He's the elder statesman and the Super Bowl winner. If our players were smart, they'd listen to him because he's been there, he's done it. He can tell them, no, guys, what you're doing is not good enough to do this." End quote.
What'd you think of that?
I think it's foolish. Yes, his resume does say Super Bowl champion. Yes, he is the longest tenured Steeler. And, you know, by default, the alpha male being the quarterback. Those are a couple of really, really good football players that that attitude has alienated. I think it's a foolish tack by the Steelers front office.
And it's almost done to rationalize the departure of two hugely productive impact players.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty, that's an organization that's built for success. They haven't had a lot of lulls in their history over the last 40 plus years.
No.
But let's see how good they are without those two guys next year.
I know. A lot of pressure on Ben. I thought that was interesting. I've got some thoughts on that. We'll get back into that later, Vinny.
Yep. It's Bickley and Murata on this rainy Thursday. We're coming to you live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
He has suffered physical pain, discomfort, trauma, humiliation, embarrassment, and emotional distress.
She said I was mean-spirited.
Small.
Small. Jealous.
Yes.
I couldn't stand that you were more intelligent than I am, and I couldn't stand that Jarrett was funnier than I am.
I think you've done a great job handling the fact that Jarrett is funnier than you and that I am smarter than you.
Yes.
Bickley and Murata. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
So many tangents on the Duke-North Carolina game last night. North Carolina wins it, hands Duke their third loss of the year. The big story is the Zion Williamson injury. Another tangent on the story is the demand for tickets. The ticket prices on the secondary market were ridiculous. I don't know if you saw the story, too, that the reaction of the North Carolina students, there was a rumor going around that Barack Obama was on campus, and students were just running to go see him. The problem with it is he wasn't on campus, and the Duke-North Carolina game that he did attend was on Duke's campus. But it was kind of like that scene from Back to School where Burt Young clears out the registration auditorium, be saying Bruce Springsteen is out front. So the whole student body runs and goes to see. Yeah, kind of that thing.
I forgot that scene. That was good.
Barack, he's still alive, Burt Young. He's got to be like in his 90s or 80s.
I think he's one of those guys that always looked older than he was.
But he looks as old as he is then. Now.
Yeah, yes. He's probably finally caught up to that number. But Barack Obama was at the game last night, had really good seats to see the 36 seconds Zion Williamson played, and then a pretty crappy basketball game after that. It was a layup drill for the Tar Heels after Williamson left the game. But we were talking about this in show prep, and this is interesting. Could you imagine if you shelled out buku bucks to sit in the front row of Duke, North Carolina? You're sitting in your seats, and all of a sudden, the former president of the United States is ushered into the seats right next to you.
What do you do in a situation like that?
I mean, it'll never happen on a high profile like that for me, but I do have, I have sat next to a famous person at an event that I didn't know was going to happen.
Tell me about it.
Oh, it's embarrassing.
I want to hear it.
So when my son Patrick was little, do you remember the television show, The Doodle Bops?
Of course. Of course I do.
Well, Doodle Bops came to Phoenix and my wife shelled out money for good seats. We were in the front row. You know who was sitting next to us, the front row?
Who?
Kerry Wood. I didn't bother him. I didn't talk to him. He was with his family. But I'm one of the few people on earth that could say I sat next to Kerry Wood in the front row of a Doodle Bop concert.
Yeah, and that's not that surprising because he's lived in Scottsdale for a while.
What in the holy hell are the Doodle Bops? I've never heard of that.
They're
like the Wiggles,
kind of, but different. The Doodle Bops
way more creepy and weird.
Way more weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Teletubbies,
not that creepy. Somewhere on the creepy scale, in between the Wiggles and the Teletubbies. You want to hear some? Oh, that's a whole episode. I don't want to play a whole episode. I wish I had some Doodle Bops.
Didn't they
sing the song Get on the Bus, that whole Doodle Bops
on
the Bus song?
Yeah, no, listen, I mean, I lived through all of that, from the Teletubbies to the Wiggles to the Doodle Bops, all of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so that was my experience. Do you have one?
Oh, I do. Yeah, I've got quite a few. I'll just tell you the one that I'll never forget as long as I live. This was shortly after Mike Tyson came out of jail for allegedly raping Desiree Washington. And this is back in the day when if you flew frequently for an airline, you would get upgraded occasionally, and which just doesn't happen anymore, at least not to people like me. But back then it did. So I got upgraded to first class, and I'm sitting across the aisle in one row behind Mike Tyson. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And I'm sitting here, and I'm like, okay. And a girl comes up from coach, and she's asking for Mike Tyson's autograph. And I thought to myself, okay, there's something a little bit off about this. Guy who just got out of prison for, you know what I mean? And now, can you sign this, please? Mike Tyson's reaction, doesn't say a word, takes his finger and goes like that, tells the girl, gestures for the girl, to do a 360 in front of him. And she does.
Did he sign the autograph?
Mm-hmm. And she went back to her seat.
Here you go, Evander. I'm sorry.
Oh, stop it. Then there was a time that I got on a flight to Seattle and Eddie Vedder got on right after me. And I wrote him a note, fanboy stupid note. Yeah, I did.
Did you really?
Oh, I did.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Oh, well, listen. This note that I wrote Eddie Vedder was so over the top and hyperbolic. I'm sure this is very hard for you to imagine. Hyperbolic and suck up fanboy kind of stuff. Gave it to the flight attendant, said, please give that to Mr. Vedder up there, okay? And now this flight to Seattle actually lost an engine. The captain came on board.
Ladies and gentlemen, don't be alarmed by this.
That kind of thing.
Don't be alarmed by this, but it was power.
It was a big plane going to sail. There were four engines on the plane, so they lost one of them. Okay, so that all happened, and Eddie didn't respond because he was sleeping, whatever. I ran into him subsequently in Seattle at Key Arena, out in the back. He was having a smoke. It was halftime. I don't even know what I was doing back there. I saw him, and I went up and said, Eddie, just, you know, I'm the dork that sent you that note on the plane. We had a little conversation. Then I saw him the next day at a game, and we said hello again. And then after the Bulls won a championship, I've told you this story. I ran into the Bulls locker room because I'm covering Dennis Rodman and writing a book on Dennis Rodman at the same time. I walk out of the Bulls locker room. I've got 15 minutes to file a 400-word sidebar. Not a lot of copy. A good seasoned writer on deadline can bang it out. Okay? I'm going back, and there's Eddie Vedder one last time, and he's standing with his back to me. I tap him on the shoulder. He turns around, recognizes me, and gives me a hug. I'm bear-hugging Eddie Vedder, okay? And it's one of those...
Smelling his hair.
I did. No, I did. I'm not lying. I did. And his hair smelled fabulous. I'm just being honest. I mean, what would you do?
Condition.
Okay, listen. Because he's a short dude, but he's a really great dude and friendly, and he doesn't look down on people, unlike some radio guests. And hugging...
Wow.
And so I'm hugging, bear hugging Eddie Vedder, and it's one of those swaying hugs. Now, he'd been drinking. If he was sober, he wouldn't be hugging a dude like me.
That's
and then
funny.
It just stopped, and he took off down the hall.
And you've never encountered him again.
Never have encountered him. And I'm sitting there going, and now my head is buzzing, because I'm like, I just bear hugged Eddie Vedder, and I've got the smell of his hair in my nostrils. And now I've got to go write a sidebar about Dennis Rodman. And all I want to do is call every friend I have on the planet and tell him I just hugged Eddie Vedder.
Wow.
That is a true story.
I told the story not long ago, too, about when I was at the sports bar working on some work things, and Muhammad Ali got seated in. So Jarrett put this out on Twitter, and the follow-up question was, you know, did you encounter somebody? Did you talk to them? Got one from Clark. Jenna Jameson, I just stared. JK, sat next to Steve Garvey on a flight a couple years ago, talked some baseball and told him the D-backs would beat LA and win the West. Spoiler, they didn't. Never let on. I knew who he was until we were getting off the plane, and I said, have a good day, Mr. Garvey. He probably appreciated that. Andrew said, I bartended for Post Malone one time at Buffalo Wild Wings. Surprisingly, he's a really nice, down-to-earth dude. Matt says, Phil Knight, and yes, I did talk to him. Somebody said, I saw Dan in a restaurant. He's famous, didn't talk, seems like a super guy, so I'm told.
Somebody said they saw Shaq in a Best Buy when he played for the Suns. He was buying multiple TVs. Didn't talk to him, but he had gigantic feet.
Tim Ring chimed in. Just said, Jordan, and hell no. David says he ran into Dan Bickley at a salon. Man, you're a man about town.
Really?
At a salon. That is right before Bickley asked for a trade.
Are you sure that are you sure that's not saloon?
It says salon. Saloon makes more sense.
Yeah, it certainly does. I'm not sure when I'd be at a salon.
I keep
saloon.
Sending your.
I love this.
Yeah, I love stories like this. We'll continue to share those throughout the show. Coming up, we're halfway through on this Thursday, and honestly, I don't know what's coming up.
The Bickley
next.
Blast.
It might be a Bickley blast, and then Steven Souza Jr.
Absolutely.
Plus the return of Vinnie Joe Trivia.
Yes.
Is this right?
Oh,
my goodness, it's going to be a power pack 12 o'clock segment next here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.